presented by Groundwork Collaborative.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It is Wednesday, June 5th. Here is what's driving the day. We are still waiting on a date for the Bibi Netanyahu address to Congress, but one thing we do know, it is pissing some Democrats off. And it's not even Speaker Mike Johnson who they're angry at, really. One, it's important to note at the end of the day, it is Johnson's decision. However, both Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, signed off on it. Here are just a couple of things that we heard from people yesterday. One lawmaker in Hakeem Jeffries' leadership circle told us, "We're already divided. We don't need this guy who's killing people coming to speak." Another person added that Netanyahu wants Trump elected president. Leah Greenberg, one of the co-executive directors of Indivisible, said, "Everything about this idea is a disaster, and it's time we stop treating him, Netanyahu, like a statesman and start treating him like a cynical would-be Trump who is prolonging this war so that he can stay out of prison." Her criticism of the two leaders, "We shouldn't be doing Republicans' bidding for them and extending an invite." At this time, there seems to be an attempt to isolate Jeffries from any blowback. One longtime Democratic aide close to the issue argued that once Schumer agreed to sign on, Jeffries, quote, didn't really have a lot of a choice but to stand with him. Jeffries in leadership meetings has been prodded about this over and over again, we're told. His response has been that essentially this wasn't his decision. Rather, he says that the Speaker and Senate Majority Leader typically make decisions on joint addresses by heads of state, and that it's customary for minority leaders in the chambers to sign on. We have much more in the newsletter. So finish this and this and head to the newsletter and read the rest of that. And today is day three in Hunter Biden's criminal court case in Wilmington, Delaware. On Monday, they chose the jury. On Tuesday, we had opening statements from the prosecution and the defense. And joining me now, just hours away from coming from the courthouse in Wilmington during the Hunter Biden case, is former federal prosecutor and opinion columnist for Political Magazine, Ankush Kodori. Ankush, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming back on. We missed you. You know, we try to get you at least one time with every big case. Monday, we had voir dire, as it's said in the biz. We ended up having a full jury and four alternates. Was that quickly, or have we been broken by the Trump way that it happened, the long, long slog?
Yeah, I think that maybe the slog maybe colored some of our expectations. This was pretty normal. Actually, I mean, it certainly one day versus the multi-day process that was necessary for Trump is relatively short by comparison. But in a case like this, like a sort of a relatively modestly sized case where you're only asking the jurors to stick around for a week or so, you can pick a jury like that in half a day.
You have Hunter on the defense here. This is one of his criminal cases. What is the defense? What is his argument at this point when we saw opening statements? What did his team lay out that stood out to you?
Well, I think as a legal matter, he's down to basically one key argument in his defense. You know, the judge has been chipping away at his potential lines of defense in various pretrial rulings, including in the last couple of days. So, you know, they've tried a lot of different things, but the judge has precluded a lot of it. And so
is that normal? Is it normal for judges to be like, no, you have one damn defense?
The reality is most of these cases like this plead out. Precisely because there are no real defenses. Now, the only distinction, and it is a material distinction at the level of like deciding whether to bring the case, between this case and the normal kind of gun, you know, the gun misrepresentation case where people are guilty of, are charged with lying on forms to buy guns, is that this is about a drug user as opposed to someone being a felon in possession or buying on behalf of a felon, which are the more standard cases. But these cases plead out all the time because there are very, very few lines of defense available. Now, in this case, Hunter, maybe himself, has insisted that he will go to trial. And the defense that they've been left with is that at the time that he, you know, indicated on these forms when he bought this gun, that he wasn't a drug addict or a drug user. The defense is that he did not knowingly make that misrepresentation because he may have honestly believed that he was not a drug addict at the time, that he was clean, in particular because he had just finished a stint at rehab.
Does it feel like they are kind of grasping at straws on the defense side at this point? They feel kind of desperate, even this early in the game?
It does. But the reason why I sort of hesitate to sound critical of the defense in this instance, you kind of have to judge a lawyer's performance or a lawyer's criminal defense against the material they have to work with. Right? And so if Abby Lowell, who is Hunter Biden's lawyer, is being told by Hunter Biden, for whatever reason, he may have very good reasons, but for whatever reason, I'm not going to just plead guilty to this. I want to, you know, advance a defense at trial. The reality is, for a case like this, there aren't many lines of defense because they're relatively straightforward cases. So I don't have a better defense for him. Let me put it that way.
One thing that has been interesting in the reporting that's come out of Wilmington on Tuesday is that the prosecutors, they've been playing excerpts from his audiobook, his book that he wrote, that really folks in Biden world were happy about because he was able to get his life out there. It was cathartic for him, they say. He did some interviews and talked about his addiction, and it kind of humanized that aspect of him. But it is at the heart, it seems, at least at the very beginning of this case, of what the prosecution is presenting here to the jury.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. And it was literally the beginning of their case. They played in over an hour of clips of Hunter Biden reading his audiobook from his memoir, reading these incredibly raw and revealing and sad passages about his life and his struggles with addiction. Now, you know, the problem for him, unfortunately, is that it's really bad news if you're a criminal defendant and the government's key witness against you is you.
Why is that?
Well, because you can't run away from your own words. It's very hard, right? You know, it wasn't even like an email that he had written. They literally had him talking about this stuff. And that's powerful stuff. You know, he's talking about, you know, being in and out of these states of addiction and being in these very desperate states of addiction. And, you know, part of the government's burden of proof is to establish that he was, in fact, a drug user, a drug addict at the time he purchased the stuff. So it's all relevant and it all came into evidence. And it all made sense as a prosecutorial matter. I understand why, if you were the government and you wanted to bring this case, you would present that evidence. It would be very strong evidence. But I have to say, like, sitting through it, it really felt like a little bit like a public flogging.
Can it backfire? Do you think their jury might think it's unseemly?
It's very possible. But I do think that there is a thematic defense as well, or something that hanging behind all this, which is that this is someone who went through a difficult time in their life. And I think we're going to hear some sympathetic testimony from his loved ones over the course of this case where, you know, they attempt to humanize him a little bit.
I'm Kush Kardori. Thank you for coming on again.
Thanks for having me.
And for your schedule today, the Senate and the House are in. Also today, President Biden arrives in Paris, France, ahead of his trip to Normandy to commemorate the anniversary of D-Day. He will be in France through the weekend. And one last thing. Today, Politico is hosting our second annual Energy Summit. I'll be kicking things off with White House Climate Advisor Ali Zaidi. My boy Ryan Lizza will be interviewing Massachusetts Senator Ed Markey. Plus, you will hear from Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm and many, many more to discuss how governments are writing and trying to rewrite new rules for the energy future in the U.S. and around the world. It starts just before noon, and you can learn more and register at politico.com. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.
Our tax code isn't fair, and it's time to fix it. For too long, the tax code has been slanted towards the wealthy and large corporations. As a result, the economy and our country has suffered. The expiration of key provisions of the Trump tax law in 2025 is a rare opportunity to reform the tax code to make it fair, raise revenue, and support equitable economic growth.